Welcome to episode 53 of Mancy, a podcast about magic and how it has influenced our culture. In each episode, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word poet and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
So our episodes have gotten pretty long, like an hour and a half, and I kind of want to tighten them up. I feel like that's a very long time to listen to us BS about magic in one singular sitting. So I'm shortening the episodes up, tightening them up, and adding more parts to the episodes. So it'll be the same amount of content or even more content. It's just smaller bites. Just try it out. If y'all hate it, you can send me a message.
What does that even mean?
It means that you'll get the same amount of content, just in more parts that are shorter.
Oh, okay.
Was there a problem?
No, just the way that you explained that made it sound weird.
Like same food, smaller bites?
Like, well, I'm just going to add more parts to the episode. I understand that you mean like parts to the series of episodes.
Yeah.
And so instead of doing 2 1.5 hour, you're doing 3 45-minute or hour episodes.
See, I thought it was February 27th, not Criticize RJ Day.
I don't understand, like, why you get to be so mean to me, and then the moment I criticize you, you're like, why are you mean? Like, I don't get it. I do not get it. No, I just was like, does this mean that Elle doesn't ever get to talk, and that's what you're going to do to shorten the episodes? Because that's what it sounded like.
That's
and
absolutely
I was like,
not.
I don't understand what we're doing
that's
now.
Absolutely not. The episodes are just less written pages. So instead of the episodes being 7 pages of written content, they're like 4. So 3-part episode, 4 pages of written content.
Okay. Alrighty.
All right.
Are you ready, Stancies?
Well, the main reason I'm doing this is because it's a lot of work to write this much.
It's a lot, yeah.
With my other writing projects going on. So hopefully this will shorten my workload without...
I don't even think, like, with other projects. Like, think about how long it takes for people to sit down and write a 7-page paper in class.
Yeah.
And we probably put more effort into research than you do for, like, a college paper. So, like, it's a lot. It's a lot of work, it is.
Yeah. So hopefully this will make the workload more manageable.
Which means more consistency, which is the thing.
All right. But burbs.
Burbs?
Burbs.
Oh, burbs, not burps.
Burbs.
Burbs.
Burps might be a different Mancy. I'll have to check.
We should see.
Gastromancy? That might be food magic. I don't know. But yeah, burbs.
Burbs.
Rulers of the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people have long been fascinated by these creatures and their ability to fly great distances. They seem so out of reach, so difficult to catch. What do they know? What do they know, these creatures?
Probably not very much. I don't know.
With a few notable exceptions, like chickens.
Chickens are pretty mystical, I would say. Frodo, with her little, like, feathered feet.
Yeah, chickens have their own separate Mancy. but this is... a little different than the alectryomancy that we did for Christmas 2 years ago. The birds are notoriously difficult to domesticate. There's very few species of bird that can be fully domesticated.
Mm-hmm.
They can be your friend. Most birds can be your friend, but never your loyal companion like a dog or a cat. The world over, they are associated with magic and the divine. Anything whose domain is the sky must be magic, right?
True.
Right. Also, birds hold a larger perspective thought unattainable to us, the bird's eye view, from which birds are able to know secret things and share hidden knowledge. Like the mice in the walls, the birds in the sky also have their own access to secrets. They're often viewed as messengers to the gods or the spies of witches. I know I've had some remarkable run-ins with birds. When I lived at the slum house... the one with the mouse problem. There was also a great horned owl who lived in the tree, and I named him Novartis because I was working for a drug research facility at the time, and I named all the animals in the yard after pharma companies.
Novartis is a really good name for a great horned owl.
It is.
It really is.
It is a good name for a great horned owl, and also questionable pharma company.
I mean, that sounds like someone I wouldn't trust, but yeah, someone that definitely I would allow to eat the mice in my yard, you know.
That. I just imagine like a golem like type person, like a goblin person that just lives in the yard and
that
eats
like
mice.
he just lives in the trunk of the tree, and like the only thing he does is eat the mice. Please don't bother him. Don't talk to him when you leave.
Mice taste nice, better than eating sugar and spice.
Give me the bone. Like.
So the bottom of the tree Novartis lived in was, like, littered with bones and the fur of rodents and other creatures Novartis had caught in his talons. The basement of the house was a separate apartment, and one day a new guy moved in who had a cat. And it was an outside cat. And he was like, this is my outside cat.
Trigger warning for everyone listening right now.
Yeah. And I warned him that there were lots of animals who lived in the backyard. Not all of them would be friendly to... I mean, we had a fucking beaver. Like,
yeah.
If a cat got in a fight with a beaver, I don't know who would win.
How big was the beaver?
Oh, the beaver was the size of a cat.
I don't think I've ever actually looked at a beaver IRL.
They're the size of a cat or small dog. Might be bigger. If they're
like, I would think a little bit bigger than Rocco could be.
Yeah.
Okay.
The beaver, funny story, ended up having to be chased out by the city because he was trying to dam up the river.
Yeah. Anyway. Doing what he does.
Anyway, I was like, yeah, you want to be careful because this is the fucking wild, like, out here. Like, your cat might not make it. And he was like, oh, the cat's fine. It's a tough cat. You know, the cat's a tough cat.
Okay.
And then the cat was found in two pieces beneath Novartis's tree, entrails hanging from the branches and blood all over the trunk. And the guy weirdly blamed me for it.
Because you predicted it. Okay, Bruno.
Like, not doing a better job of controlling the wildlife in the yard. Like, that was my responsibility.
Did he really blame you?
Yeah, he did.
Oh,
that guy was a little...
I would be really upset if I moved to a new place and then my animal got eaten. But we also don't have outside animals for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, that's why.
Yeah, it's, like, ironic considering his outside cat is, like, terrible for the ecosystem. And the best way to, like, manage wildlife is to not have an outside cat.
Yeah.
So as far as I was concerned, the yard was the domain of these animals and the house was my domain. And the critters and I could both live with that. In any case, Novartis eventually moved on and the tree was felled. It had been dead for a long time and like hollowed out by creatures like Novartis to live in. And the city threatened my landlord with increased fines. They felled the tree and ended up destroying the sprinkler system.
great.
Which was great because the landlord kept the sprinkler system going and it flooded the yard routinely. It was never repaired, ever. They also never recovered the felled tree's pieces. They just knocked down the tree in pieces and then left all the pieces there. So I chopped them up into smaller pieces for firewood. Mm-hmm. Still, I'll never forget what Novartis looked like. He was fucking impressive. Like, mm-hmm. The biggest bird I've seen next to the condor at the Tracy Aviary. It seemed like the wingspan was, like, as tall as my body. He was fucking huge.
Yeah, owls can be enormous.
I mean, he's an owl big enough to eat a cat. That is a really big owl.
Yeah.
To, like, pick up a full-grown adult cat and rip it in half. That's a huge owl.
Birds freak me out because of that. Like, people are like, birds are so pretty. And I'm like, they're fucking terrifying.
They're apex predators, man.
Yeah.
And I was unsure if, like, Novartis was, like, a protector animal or just, like, a terror animal. But I can say for sure that he was definitely, like, the alpha owl. Like, he was, like, a pristine example of his species.
Yeah.
And great horned owls are here in Utah, but they are still fairly rare. Like, you don't usually see them.
Mm-hmm.
Elle, what's your relationship with birds like?
So when I was, like, 15, 16, like, I was, like, 15 turning 16, I used to babysit for this family that had three kids. And they would have a babysitter, like, every night. The parents were both musicians. I knew them because they went to the same church as my Girl Scout leader. And my Girl Scout leader's daughter, who was my best friend, would babysit for them sometimes. And then, like, she couldn't always babysit for them. So they, like, told them, like, the family my name. And they would straight up send out emails with, like, lists of all of the dates that they needed babysitters for. And every single person on the email chain would respond with what days they could do. Like, it was like that.
Yeah.
Their kids were terrible. They, like, their house was just absolutely a mess. And they had just, like, entire rooms full of toys from the children. And in the kitchen, they had three birds. I do not know what kind of birds they were. Like, I was attacked by them. Yes. Like, pet birds. And one day I was, like, trying to make the kids food.
Were they, like, tropical birds? Like, cockatiels?
They were – I think that they were, like, the little, like, blue and yellow maybe budgies.
Oh, okay.
I think, like, little ones. They – I mean, they attacked me in that they were free-flying in their house, and they flew at my head while I was in the kitchen. And I was like – nope. Like, no thank you. So since then, I've always kind of had, like, a weird – like, maybe fear of birds. I don't love, like, being in houses with them or watching them. I have a friend who has a bunch of birds. She's totally a bird lady. And she has, like, her – one of her birds thinks of her as, like, her girlfriend, or she is his girlfriend. His name's Lucky. And they're, like, buddies. They're, like, best friends.
Oh.
So, but, yeah, I won't, like – I will go over and, like, look at the birds and be like, hello, Lucky. You're cute in your cage over there. 3 feet away from me.
Tell us about the crow in San Luis Obispo.
If you have an expectation of a story, you need to communicate it.
Well, I am communicating it right now. I wanted to know your relationship with birds, but now I want you to tell the story of this weird bird thing that happened.
Yeah. So birds are, like, fine, but, like, not my most favorite thing. I would say they go in the, like, how when you're like, do you want to hold the rat? And I was like, no, I don't want to hold the rat. Like that very much in that, like, if you can't, like, predict its movements, I don't like it. So when last spring, we were in California with, like, our little house, our nut house. We went to California.
Yeah, there was, like, a special deal on hotels to attract tourism.
Yeah, it was because they were sending out money for it was, like, what is the word? Stimulus money to the San Luis Obispo, like, Santa Maria Valley, specifically in California, that if you went and you, like, booked like, tourism things, they gave you money back. So we went for, like, 5 days. It was great. We, like, stayed at the best hotel right on the beach. It was so nice. But my best friend and I went into town, and we were, like, wandering around downtown San Luis Obispo, and we were, like, walking down the street because we had, like, left RJ at the hotel for him to write and work, and we were just going to go wander and, like, go shopping. And we're walking down the street, and these two businessmen are, like, walking towards us carrying, like, their, like, lunch leftovers. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this pretty big, like, black crow just drops out of the sky in between us. It's like me and John and then these two businessmen, and there's just this crow which is laying on its back, arms, like, wings spread out, and its mouth, like, a little bit open, just, like, laying on the sidewalk. And John and I are like, what do we do? Like, what does this mean? What do we do about this? I was like, I don't know if we, like, try to move it. I'd like, do we just leave it? I
no,
think we should find someone.
Definitely don't touch.
I was like, I think we should find someone to do something about this. We, like, walked up to the bird, the, like, two businessmen, like, one of them was like, whoa, did you see that? He, like, fell out of the sky. And he's, like, pointing at the sky and, like, looking at the bird and looking at me. And he's like, whoa, what does that mean? And I was like, nothing good. Like, I don't, I'm not sure. I don't think he was dead. We didn't move him. I did, like, kind of continue, and I tried to find, like, I asked people, I was like, hey, this thing happened, and there was a lot of dogs, and I really didn't want a dog to, like, bother it or get it, or if it was diseased, to eat it, and then, you know, like that. So I tried to find someone to pick it up, and I couldn't find anyone. And by the time we, like, went back, maybe 45 minutes later, it was gone.
So my theory is that this crow or raven had run into a window, hit its head really hard, tried to fly away and probably then just like blacked out.
Well, so one of the things that was super weird is we like there was a couple of witchcraft like metaphysical shops that we went to on that like street. And one of them was very cool. It had a bunch of plants. It was like crystals and plants. Great combination. And I was like talking to the girl at the front counter and I was like, oh, my God, this like crow just fell out of the sky. And she was like, what? What happened? I was like, well, this like crow dropped out of the sky in between us, like us and this other set of people. And she was like, oh, my God, it's weird here. It's weird here. And I was like, what do you mean it's weird here? And she was like, well, my coworker was coming into work one day and then all of a sudden, like she turned and then there's a woman just standing in the middle of the street and then she was gone. And then all of these birds were around her. And so her theory was that like San Luis Obispo, specifically like the main street of downtown They have, like, a name. I think it's just SLO, San Luis Obispo, SLO, is, like, just, like, this alternate dimension with birds and stuff. I don't know. I think that probably the crow, like, was dazed. I mean, he fell probably, like, 15, 20 feet out of the sky. Like, it was a pretty far fall. So I can't, like, I hope he lived. I don't know.
We're going to talk about psychopomps in part two. Do you think maybe it was a psychopomp?
I don't know what that is.
Well, we'll discuss it.
Okay, cool. Maybe I do. I don't know.
All right. Birds are smart creatures. In fact, ravens are on par with great apes when it comes to intellect, which is shocking. They will probably inherit the earth when we leave, as it will belong to crows. It's likely they know something you don't. So let's talk about augury, also known as ornithomancy, divination and magic with birds. First, let's address what augury is and why it doesn't have a mancy at the end.
okay.
So augury is actually the Roman term for ornithomancy, which is bird magic.
Yeah, bird magic.
While augury focuses mainly on birds, it's often just synonymous with divination itself. For the pre-Christian Roman religion, the will of the gods was determined through augury, the reading of omens. Most often, burps. The person reading these omens was called an augur. A bit like the druids of ancient Celtic society, augurs were an integral part of the classical Roman political system. Any decision that had to do with Rome's Pax Fortuna and Salus, which is peace, good fortune, and well-being, required an augur to read the omens first. How many things do you think had to do with peace, good fortune, and well-being?
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Right. Everything required the input of an augur. In fact, classical Roman coins featured an augur with a bird on the back of them.
Oh, wow.
And we've talked about, like, historical political figures like Napoleon who have consulted psychics and oracles. But for ancient Romans, the oracles basically had their own seat at the political table with everyone else.
Which is how it should be,
They were like their own fucking Senate.
Yeah, that's what I'm aiming for. Like, that's where I'm just kidding. I don't really want to do that. I do feel like that is probably something that I bet at some point in my life people are going to be like, hey, it's your turn at the political table.
I mean, that's what, what's her face? Marianne Williamson. Trying to be America's auger.
Yes.
Of course, augurs would be subject to another group called magistrates who also were practiced augurs.
Yeah.
The auger would turn in their report of the interpretation of the omens, but it was ultimately the magistrate's call on whether to act or not act based on the omens. So the augur would be like, here's the omen I saw in my interpretation. And the magistrate would be like, I think your interpretation is correct. Let's do or not do this thing. Or I think your interpretation is wrong. Go back and re-augur.
Try again. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm saying the word omens But the official term was actually auspices, which is derived from the Latin phrase that means looking at birds.
Oh, so how is that related to auspicious?
That's exactly where we get the word auspicious.
That's awesome.
That's where we get the word auspicious. And it is the most auspicious of days. It is this Pokemon Day.
It is Pokemon Day.
Or
woo!
If you were to say, you know, your arrival is auspicious, it means that the omens aligned.
Like well-timed.
Or like it's divinely
lucky.
Sanctioned that you're here.
Everything I do is auspicious.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
While the ancient Greeks looked at the behavior of birds as being one of many ways to tell the will of the gods, one of many ways the will of the gods can be interpreted, the ancient Romans believed that the birds were the will of Jupiter made manifest. And those sound similar, but think of it this way. You look at the clouds, see they're growing darker, and say, oh, it's going to rain. That's the Greek way of doing ornithomancy.
Okay.
It's merely a sign, a reaction to the gods. Augury is like the clouds spelled a message in the sky that said, yo, Jupiter here, I'm about to make it rain. So if an augur fucked up and
they
read the message wrong,
right?
Then basically the whole Roman state would shut down until the gods were appeased.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there, I'm just going to ask a question really quick. Did you put like indigenous American stuff in here or is this like a good point for me to throw that in? Or are you going to save that for a different episode?
I mean, you can go ahead and throw it in. I'm definitely going to talk more about it later. I'm going to focus on this Roman augury thing for the most of this episode.
The only thing I'm being reminded of as you're talking about this is like in animal medicine, which is what I like to use like for spirit animals, which we cannot have access to, but animal medicine, which is like taking the characteristics of animals and applying them to our lives in order to, you know, do X, Y, Z to meet our goals. So in animal medicine, the eagle is the direct connection to the gods. And that is like how you know you're on the right path or when you need to have that direct connection, that direct communication with the gods, you go to the eagle, which is why I have an eagle tattoo on my thigh. It's because it's the direct connection to God.
Actually, same for the Greeks.
Yeah, I know.
Eagles are connected to Zeus.
So that's the thing that's interesting is that think about like how separate those two cultures are, literally like different parts of the world at, I think, similar times, right?
I mean, I don't know when that belief developed versus the Greek belief, if it was before or after. But yeah, completely no contact.
And they still have the same like view of eagles and birds really being that connection. So interesting.
Yeah. Elle, how effective do you think these Roman augurs were as part of the Roman political system?
Well, it really depends on how much power they had. Like, that would be the thing.
Well, how much power do you think they had?
Well, I would think that it would be – they probably wouldn't be at the table. Like, knowing the people that I know that like to be psychics that want that, they had better be respected as all-knowing. And if they fuck up, it's like, well, that's because you did something wrong. So you better fix it with me and fix it with God, and then we'll get back to work. Like – for a lot of times in, like, history with a lot of these, like, really important famous psychics, they basically have, like, uber god complexes. Mm. So.
Well, as far as making political decisions based on birds, they had debatable success.
Mm-hmm.
As far as manipulating politics to get their way, resoundingly successful.
Yes, that's, yeah, exactly
resoundingly
that.
Successful.
Exactly.
An augur could indefinitely delay any action by the state.
Of course.
Basically, they were the original filibuster.
Yes.
A politically minded augur could delay elections, start a war, end a war, disrupt trade. They could be like, oh, gee, I know you wanted progressivist Maximus to be in the Senate, but omens say no, try the election again and we'll see what the omens say.
Exactly that. Those egocentric, off, like, it's not the people that are, like, of service that want those positions.
Even if the interpretation was disputed, that would mean the entire state would have to shut down anyway to appease
the
gods.
Yeah, you have to, like, listen. And he's like, well, fine, fuck it. Like, what are you going to do? I'm the god talker, so.
Augurs would often also create self-fulfilling prophecies by manipulating policy using their power. Augurs, incredible amount of political power.
Yeah.
In fact, the words inaugural and inauguration come auger. From auger. They come from this practice. And that translates to taking omens from birds in flight. Basically, the auger said, we have the green light, so we may now take public action. So the inauguration is the auger
saying,
is when the auger says it's okay.
Yeah.
Imagine if we had to wait for someone to, like, consult the birds every time a president is inaugurated.
Yeah, that's my end goal. I think, actually, Putin should, like, hire me and, like, as a consult. And
yeah,
then we could
you
just
can
change
consult
everything.
The birds. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about
like,
that.
I'm sorry, you can't take action unless the auspices say.
I bet Putin has a psychic working for him. Probably several.
I think he has spies.
Same thing. Well, I mean, as we talked about when you were like, oh, is this going to be the new branch of psychic military? And I was like, new? Like,
I mean,
like that.
The CIA is researching it. We don't know if
they have.
Like, psychic.
Have you not listened to that episode of Let's Get Haunted where they literally talked to the guy who 20 years ago was conducting experiments on clairvoyance with psychics in the military? Because it's literally a thing that people have literally talked about 20 years ago.
Weird.
Yes.
Weird. We're going to have to do a whole episode on that. That's
well,
sure.
I mean, that's, I guess that's, yeah, your thing. Yeah.
When we get to interview the guy, can we talk about psychics in warfare?
Maybe.
If he gets back to us about using the Akashic Records in warfare.
Well, he said that he was not, he would have to, I have to sweet talk him onto the episode.
Oh, okay.
Like, he was like, I'm not sure that that's going to fly with his, like, actual professional stuff. And so we might get him. If we do, I told him that we would have a chat at the end of March. And so when we do that, then I'll kind of check the temperature of that. And if he agrees, then yes, I will do a whole fucking episode on psychics and warfare.
Okay.
Absolutely, I will do it.
But, I mean, the weird question about augury is, like, why birds in particular?
Because,
like, why not
connection
fire?
To God.
Why not fire or...
Because birds God.
Ocean or...
Birds God. Birds life. Birds God life.
Well, it actually goes back to a legend of Rome's founding.
Oh, okay.
Was said to have been done using augury. So there are lots of different ways, I guess, in the classical Greek society that God's wills can be interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
Like fire, God. Ocean, God. Mm-hmm. Air, God. Everything, God.
God, yeah.
But birds in particular were used by the founders of Rome, Romulus and Remus. They were arguing over where to place their new city. They were in a valley with several hills. Romulus wanted the city to be upon the centralmost hill, the Palatine Hill. Remus wanted the city to be built upon the Aventine Hill because it was easier to fortify in the event of war. So to settle this dispute, they decided to perform augury. Remus saw 6 vultures. Romulus saw 12. Romulus wins. So the city was built on the centermost hill.
And it was named after him, too.
Yep. A hill that would become the nucleus of the Roman Empire. Thus, the reading of birds became the primary political divination tool for ancient Romans.
Oh, that's cool.
However, there were other forms of auspices that were not bird-related. I'm going to list off the different auspices. The first, from the sky. And this is the order of importance.
Okay.
This auspice is involved in the observation of thunder and lightning, which is seen as the most important auspice. Whenever an augur reported that Jupiter had sent down thunder and lightning, they called a no comitia, a gathering deemed to represent the entire Roman population. So, like, big giant meeting, thunder and lightning, Jupiter's pissed, we got a fucking, like, emergency meeting right
okay.
now. The next most important is from birds. Though auspices were typically bird signs, not all birds in the sky were seen as symbols to be will of the gods. There were two classes. Ossinines, who gave auspices via their singing, so by interpreting like bird song.
Mm-hmm. That's fun.
And Alates, who gave auspices via how they flew, so interpreting like the direction they're flying, the way they're flying.
So in Druid, what was that called when you look at the whole flock of birds? Wasn't there like a specific name for that flock of
augury.
Birds? So it's just augury. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that when we're
is that what we're going to look
at,
for
at how they flew? Well, we're going to look for both.
Okay.
Yeah, so you look at, like, the shape of, like, the way the birds fly or, like, how they take off, what direction they're flying. Usinese included ravens, crows, owls, and hens, each offering either a favorable omen or an unfavorable, depending on which side the auger's designated area they appeared on. So, like, right or left, you know. Right being good side, left being evil side, because left is evil.
Left Latin. Is evil.
Yeah, for some reason.
Ridiculous.
Birds of the Altes were the eagle, the vulture, and yeah, just like the big flying birds. Also called the Ossifarga. Mm. Ossifarga. And these Roman words are hard. These ancient Latin words are hard.
yeah.
Some birds, like the Picus martius, or the Feronius, or the Para, could be considered among the Ossinines. And so they're like some birds that overlap.
Okay.
Every movement and sound made by these birds had a different meaning and interpretation according to the different circumstances or time of the year they were observed.
Okay.
As far as what those are, like... people literally had to go to college for like years.
I was
going to
ask like if there's like a book, if there's like, it would take a long time to learn all of that.
Yeah, like the earliest Roman colleges were only to teach augury.
Well, augurs were really like important. It was a very necessary
and
thing.
Powerful, yeah.
My dad wants me to be an augur.
I know. Listen, your father was an augur. Your grandfather was an auger, and you're going to be an auger. But I want to be in the theater.
I want to be a philosopher. Don't waste your time on that
stuff.
I want
to be a poet. Shut up, Virgil. You're never going to be a poet.
Augury is where the money is. Yeah.
So the next most important one is from the dance or of birds feeding. So kind of like what we did with electromancy, where they would spread bird feed or watch the birds feed. Read by interpreting the eating patterns of chickens. And those were generally used for military expeditions. So like the electromancy, the chickens were used for
Putin's
the military.
Yeah, Putin's over there with his fucking...
He's like feeding the chickens.
Yeah, he's like, where do we go? Where do I go? Oh, no, they're not going to let us fly through airspace. What do we do, birds? It's and like, the chickens are like, walk.
We can't fly. We don't know.
Okay.
Cicero shows that at one point, any bird could perform the sacred dance, which is, I guess, what they when they waddle around and eat food. but as the practice progressed, it soon.
I'm into the kink where they're like the sacred dance is eating and walking around. Like,
great.
Oh my god.
But as the practice progressed, it soon began customary to only use chickens because they were the easiest to wrangle.
Yeah.
They could be kept in a cage under the care of a keeper of the auspice chickens.
Yeah. And they were probably all white. I bet they were all white chickens or black chickens.
Probably. I mean, the all white chicken thing is a Russian thing.
Oh, is it?
So Putin is literally
chickens.
Probably.
Yeah, he probably really does have just a whole bunch of chickens.
Yeah, the electromancy we did was more of a Russian tradition.
It was. I remember that it was, Russian.
Yeah. So the keeper of the auspice chickens, when the time came, released the chickens and threw them at some bread or cake. He didn't throw the bread or cake.
He threw the chickens
at the bread or cake. And if the chickens refused to come out or eat the bread or uttered a cry or beat their wings or flew away, the sign was considered unfavorable.
God, I wonder if this really stressed animal is going to show signs of distress if I throw like them at cake.
But at the same time, chickens are dumb and they're just going to be like, cake, yeah.
I guess, yeah.
Conversely, if the chicken left its cage... Or something fell from its mouth and landed on the ground or was ravenously eating the cake. These were signs that was favorable. Like,
yeah,
OK, go invade. Invasion's going to go good. The chicken dribbled cake. You can go do it.
Well, that would be like a when you're looking at the metaphors of things, like. Not only is the chicken able to take from this, but it's able to take so much that it can't eat it all? And so that would be like a, if you're hoping to plunder something, it would be like a, oh, there's so much there that we can't even take it all. So, yeah.
Well, obviously it fucking worked for them. I mean, the Roman Empire is gigantic.
Yeah.
So next one from Quadrupeds. Auspice could also be taken from animals who walked on 4 feet. These auspices were not part of the original science of augurs, though, and they were never used for state affairs. This was just kind of like, if you just want to see how your day is going, you know, we're not going to, you know, base our whole society around this like birds, but you can look at...
Birds are definitely better than dogs.
You can look at a fox or a wolf or a horse or dog who crossed your path and or was found in an unusual location, and that meaning could be interpreted by an appointed augur as potentially the will of the gods. Maybe, probably.
Yeah.
You know. And the last from Portents. This category of auspice represents every other possible occurrence which could result in an auspice which does not fit into the above category. So this is like the everything else category.
Okay.
It's usually just like unexpected actions that happen while taking auspices. So like sneezing, stumbling, any slightly abnormal event could be taken as a sign from the gods to be interpreted.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the order of importance. So like thunder, birds, the sacred dance of waddling, feeding birds.
Yeah.
Quadrupeds and
yeeting chickens.
Oops, I sharted.
The Beyblade incident in 2011.
The magistrate is like reading the fucking auspice. It's like, okay, so you saw two seagulls flying to the right. Oh, but you also sharted. So I don't.
Bad day.
Reinterpret this, please.
Ruined. Absolutely. Just go back to bed, actually.
So who could be an augur?
Who could be an augur?
Elle, who do you think could be an augur? Who's allowed?
Definitely only men. Definitely only, like, men of a certain class because they had to afford to go to college. And probably people who had been, like, tapped or selected by previous augurs.
Basically.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. You kind of hit the nail on the head.
I know.
That was until 300 BC. Where only patricians could be augurs.
Yeah.
Patricians being the upper class men of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
While the rest of Romans, the masses, were called plebeians.
Yep.
And that's where we get the term plebeian, referring to somebody who's average, uninitiated, unremarkable. the lowest common denominator. In ancient Rome, though, they were the working class, regular folk.
Yeah.
Cicero, an augur, was pretty stoked on the idea of patricians only doing augury because it kept that pesky popular opinion thing from interfering with politics.
Yeah.
However, after 300 BC, a new law was passed that expanded the number of augurs from 4 to 9, requiring that 5 of the 9, a majority, be plebeians. The lower class had access to consultations with the gods for the first time, and they could use this newfound power to interpret auspices that benefited the average person.
Good.
And they could also potentially dispute unfair auspices set forth by the patricians. Augury still did require training, which meant a lot of time spent at college to learn the craft.
Yeah.
So in that way, there was still a bit of a barrier.
Yeah.
But I mean, ancient Roman college, definitely more affordable than college now.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, ancient Roman college, not the same.
I mean, I would say that ancient Roman college, probably the cost to do that would be if your family could afford to not have you home.
Yeah, that's
like,
it.
Like, that would be the cost of it, is like, can we sacrifice having someone to work in order for them to go do that?
Basically. Yeah. And then if they succeed, I mean,
then,
they're an augur. They're
Well, so then like they can take care of their family politically and all of that. Yeah.
So how would they divine the birds? Essentially, they do the same thing that we've done in theriomancy so far. They just observe the bird's behavior and draw conclusions from there. Notably, they'd observe what kinds of birds they encounter and interpret bird song and direction of flight as the message. Finding a dead bird, absolutely ill omen, bad, bad, bad. Finding a bird run into something, bad, bad, bad. Injured bird, bad.
Oh, so the crow was really a bad omen.
Extremely bad omen.
I don't know. Nothing bad happened. Well, I mean, the world, but like that trip, it wasn't like, did it, like, was there any catastrophic event that I don't remember? I mean,
the bird did get back up.
Well, I don't know. It was gone.
Do you think Novartis came out and was like, yummy, yummy, sugar and spice? Nom, 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 nom.
So San Luis Obispo is like a tourist town. They don't just leave dead things on their sidewalks when they have like people and dogs
Fair.
Walking. And so it could have been that someone in the city went and cleaned it up. I don't know.
Yeah, super bad.
I guess the other thing was that John lost their earbuds on the trip.
Oh, the crow.
So maybe that's what it was. That's the only thing that happened, though.
So the shape of large flocks of birds taken in the sky could also be interpreted mm-hmm. as a more abstract omen. And again, this didn't start with the Romans. In the Odyssey, in Homer's epic, The Odyssey, an eagle is seen flying to the right with a dead dove in its talons. And this is taken as an augury to mean that Odysseus is returning to Penelope and that he will kill their suitors. Doves okay. being a representative of love.
Mm-hmm.
It is said that Prometheus introduced humanity to ornithomancy by telling them which birds portend goodwill and which sinister. And also why part of his punishment includes having his liver eaten by eagles every day. Zeus, being a god of the sky, is well represented by eagles and other birds, but eagles are really his domain.
Mm-hmm.
Odin, from Norse mythology, has two ravens, Sunin and Mugin,
yeah.
Who are basically his eyes, his spies, like wise little advisors. We have stuff even earlier than that, though, from the even earlier than like ancient Greece, from Hittite society, who wrote on bird oracles around 1500 BC,
wow.
from which the Greek practice is thought to be derived.
Yeah.
I believe Hittite is like Africa, Egypt region.
I was going to ask where they were.
Mediterranean Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
One of the earliest Greek translations of the Bible, augury. Is also mentioned. The Septuagint Old Testament is the old Greek Bible. In the passage where Joseph discovers his silver cup hidden in his brother's luggage. Why have ye stolen my silver cup? Is it not out of this which my Lord drinks? And he divines augury with. I am unsure if he is referring to hydromancy, like he's using the silver
yeah.
cup to like do hydromancy, but it specifically says augury.
But augury also, you said, just barely, it refers to just divination.
Just divination in general.
Yeah.
Or maybe the silver cup was used to attract birds in some way, as it was described as being like a bowl in size. So it could have been like a bird bath or like a bird feeder. Those who have seen the Robert Eggers horror movie The Witch might recognize the silver cup as an image. I have taken thy mother's silver cup.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, silver
right.
cup.
Right, like that's a metaphor for this Bible story with like the stolen silver cup.
I
kind of
want to rewatch The Witch. It was interesting.
It's very interesting. And the movie also features a raven familiar
yeah.
sent by the movie's witch in the guise of the mother's missing child.
Yeah.
As like a sort of ill omen. So I think that's it for the core background information on augury. While the Romans were far from the first to divine with birds, their practice has made its way into our language and our culture more than any other bird divination. Now, I'm going to talk about superstitions involving birds and keep in mind how they are related with this Roman background as we go through all these other parts. That all public action was preceded by bird divination and that bird omens had ultimate veto power and filibuster power in their society, which conquered the majority, like a large swath of the world, especially Europe. Which brings me to the spookiest nursery rhyme we've covered on the show, maybe, next to the poems about the guy who's eaten – the priest who's eaten by mice. this nursery rhyme is actually a specific way to remember how to read an auspice connected to magpies, which were considered a bird of ill omen. And you've probably actually heard this rhyme before. It was first recorded in 1760, but likely was an oral tradition for an unknown amount of time before that. I'll start with the modern version, and then I'll recite the original. Essentially, the song tells you what lies in your future based on the number of magpies you count grouped together. One for sorrow, 2 for joy, 3 for a girl, 4 for a boy, 5 for silver, 6 for gold, 7 for a secret never to be told. Have you heard that before?
Mm-mm.
So that modern version I just recited is actually used in the British kids show Magpie, which ran from 1968 to 1980, which is honestly a really long time.
Yeah, 12 years. Yeah,
yeah, for a show to run. Because of that, most people think that's just how the rhyme has always gone.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the original.
I was like, this is not spooky. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. 1 for sorrow, 2 for mirth, 3 for a funeral, 4 for a birth, 5 for heaven, 6 for hell, 7 for the devil, his own self.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's spooky. But now you can think about that next time you see magpies. In America, it's often crows that are attributed to this rhyme.
Yeah, I would say, like, I feel like crows are the bigger one, but we have a lot of crows. Like, they're kind of trash birds like pigeons.
Yeah, and the magpies are definitely more common in Europe, but we have magpies here.
Yeah, we have magpies.
We have magpies in Utah. But more common in America, the crows and ravens.
I think magpies are more of like a summer bird for us.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah, but think about that when you see the birds, 1 for sorrow, 2 for mirth.
So if there are 7, does that mean I get to sell my soul to the devil? Like my time has come.
I don't know, but the devil's watching you. Evil eye is on you.
Oh, is that the idea?
Yeah, it's not just sorrow. It's not just death. It's the devil, his own self. So the worst
of
the worst.
Does that mean that I get to sell my soul to him? Like, does that mean it's time to strike a deal if that happens? He's visiting me?
Listen, if a slimy guy with a sawtooth grin approaches you in a suit and says, now listen, I've got a deal for you.
I'll be like, Aleister Crowley? Yeah. How did you get here?
And you can be like, are you the devil? And he'd be like, no, I do NFTs.
Oh, my God. Where were we? I think we were at a coffee shop like last weekend when we were having writing time. And this guy, like the owner was sitting there like a couple tables away from us working on his computer. And this guy like comes up and he, I think, was selling his art in the coffee shop. But he was like, hey, I just wanted to like check in with you about some art. And they were having this chat. And this guy goes, actually, yeah, like I'm really trying to like break into like the NFT market right now, you know, like digital art. And I was like, so bad. Ugh. Anyway,
that's all I've got for now. I think this is pretty crucial background information, like this Roman practice.
I mean, like, I don't know that it changed what I would have done to read.
But I think it will change what we're going to read about, essentially. Yeah. So our episodes are getting shorter with more parts, but we'll do the same number of friend of the show and patron readings. But in part one, we'll just do a general reading for
everyone. We don't have to do that every time. We can just see how it goes. This time we're going to do a general reading.
We're playing with the format a little bit just to see how it goes. With a general reading, I'm going to think of like a general question. So, Elle, I want you to imagine you have been appointed the auger of America.
I'm not down to read about the war in Ukraine.
I'm not telling you to read about the war in Ukraine.
I'm not going to do it. Okay.
I just want you to read about America in general.
I don't really want to do that either. Like, I don't – I'm scared to be American. I'm scared to be here. I would like to leave. That is what I think about America and the state that we're in. I'm scared. I would like to go somewhere else now. Like, I don't – that's my prediction for it.
But what do the birds have to say?
Probably the same thing. Let's go do that, I guess.
All right. So we're going to go read the auspices. We're going to drive around and try to find birds, which shouldn't be too hard in Utah in the early-ish spring.
There's birds everywhere here. RJ's like, well, we have to go find them. And I'm like, literally there are birds everywhere here.
We have pigeons. I mean,
no, like we live on the side of the mountain. There's a ton of birds at our house. There's like a blue jay. I found a woodpecker in our backyard like 2 weeks ago.
Blue jays are a good sign.
Yeah, I know. I was stoked.
Most corvids are a bad sign, but blue jays are a good sign.
Yeah, it's because they're blue. Like we literally had that just like a few, like maybe a month ago I saw it. Like we have birds everywhere.
Yeah, but we still have to go find him.
I guess we're gonna go. Like, we're gonna.
I didn't say it would be hard to find him, but we still gotta do it.
Okay, we'll go do that then.
Yeah. Anyway, let's begin the general augury reading for
America.
America, like President Biden is like, please consult the auspices for me.
No, President Biden is like, do you think that my approval rating is going to go up if I go to war? Is that going to get me elected again? Am I even going to live long enough to get there?
Like, now we need to know if the birds are going to have if the decision.
Do they have ice cream?
If the birds, if the malarkey is in the larks.
Okay, Dad, calm down. I know you're confused. It's okay. it's bad. It's bad.
It's bad. Hey,
that's okay.
We'll probably run into our state bird, the seagull, and I'm going to talk about why seagulls are the state bird of you. It's a dumb story, but a good story. But
okay,
yeah.
Let's go do it.
All right. We are in the car. We've driven out by the Great Salt Lake. Now we're just off the frontage road in the western area where there's lots of cattails and puddles where birds gather. And so far we've seen two geese. I saw a massive flock of birds, but Elle missed it. So we're waiting out by where that flock of birds was. And we saw a hawk.
Yeah, it was a smallish hawk. But
yeah, it seemed like a pretty small, it wasn't like a pick up your dog and.
No, it wasn't like a red tail hawk, it was just a little baby guy. But it had the hawk nose.
Yeah, and then Elle saw some birds in flight that approached from our right and went left.
There they are.
And there they are.
So we're just gonna sit.
And we're gonna.
And watch the sky for a minute.
Watch the sky like an augur of old. So the Senate, has decided to make you the auger. You've been chosen.
Oh, this is it.
To be America's auger.
Okay. I see one bird.
One bird? Where do you see the bird?
Straight ahead. 1 o'clock moving to 12 o'clock.
Oh, I see. I think that's that hawk. Like, it's a big bird.
It is a big bird, yeah.
And he's probably looking for smaller birds to eat. Oh, yeah, he's zooming. He's looking over the highway for roadkill.
Yeah.
I'm going to see what kinds of hawks are native to Utah. The red-tailed hawk is the most common.
Yeah. They're the bigger ones, though.
Yeah. 9 types of hawks in Utah. Let's see if I can identify the one that we saw. Broad-winged hawk? No, smaller than that. Swainson's hawk? Yeah, it looked like that. Swainson's hawk.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Burbs?
Oh, it also kind of looked like this one, the sharp-shinned hawk.
Acipictor hawkerus.
Smaller raptor, common throughout the year statewide. Eats squirrels.
Squirrels?
Yeah, if it eats squirrels, I don't know if it'll find squirrels out here, but it'll definitely find the small mice. They're all over out here in the brush, in the garbage.
I don't know. Like, do you think we can keep waiting here a little bit longer? Do we drive further down?
Well, we could do that. Let's drive further down and you can think about interpreting the bird signs we've seen so far. If we don't see any more burbs, that's what we got.
I haven't really gotten
the spark of inspiration from the burbs.
No, like I have not really had the like, I mean, this is the thing with like augury when you live in a place that has metric fuck tons of birds.
Yeah, I mean, they all got their own agendas, these birds.
I know. Like, how do you be like, sir, please tell me. Like, at least the rats, we could hold them. Be like, hello, sir. Please tell us what you think about, you know.
I mean, seeing the hawk on the hunt was, you know, fairly remarkable, I guess.
Yeah. Let's keep driving, I think.
All right.
All right, so we kept driving, and we found a little pull-off with a sign. It's a gated area with a sign that says Entering Trust Lands. And we saw a large red-tailed hawk. I'm pretty sure it is a red-tailed hawk. It is the most common one to see in Utah, and they're pretty good size. And it approached from the right, landed on a power line, and ate something it had caught. And I got a couple pictures, and then it flew to the left.
Yeah, so RJ pointed out, like, second bird of prey we've seen flying to the left. Things about America, the left side is the evil side. Well, I wouldn't say evil, but, like, I think...
For the Romans, it was.
Yeah.
I mean, the Latin word for left is sinister.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they really hated left-handed people.
Right. Anyway, dumb. But it definitely feels like America's on the prowl for the come-up, is what I would say. Like, I feel like there's kind of this thought of, like, how we can win, how can we, like, capitalize on what's happening, how can we take advantage of things. And I think almost to the detriment, but almost like we'll see how bad it's going to be. Like we're going to go back and forth. I'm a little bit nervous about America feeling like it gets to take advantage of like smaller countries or smaller people to make themselves look better or like that they're going to act like they're helping when really it's like to the detriment of both. Like I think that's we're going to be entering into some pretty gnarly stuff. I feel like the two birds of prey, two predators,
and one score to kill.
Yeah, I think that's like we need to not act like America wouldn't have its own interests in a lot of the things that are happening in the world right now. You know.
Okay. Yeah, just because Russia bad does not mean America good, and just because America bad does not mean Russia good.
Yeah, it's very complex. I don't know, at the same time, just a bird doing what he's got to do to stay alive.
Yeah, I mean, this is a successful hunting ground for him. Like, there's not a lot of cars, tons of mice, lots of refuse that attracts the mice.
Yeah, this is where I would be. Oh, we got a couple more birds up there. Just kind of flying.
To the right.
They look like ducks.
Ducks.
Like how quickly they're flapping.
Yeah, I mean, this is the season for like geese and stuff. I didn't mention on the show I was going to, but I teach English in the prison. And one of the only animals you can see at the prison is geese. Like that area is like a wetland for geese. And so I count the number of geese as I walk to the maximum security prison facility, like on the prison campus, to determine what kind of day it's going to be. I do like goose augury, and then I tell them what kind of day it is. If it's a one goose day, if it's a five goose day, what does that mean? I don't know. One for sorrow, two for mirth, I guess. But
yeah, two geese today, mirth.
Two geese.
Mirth and joy and successful hunting until it goes bad. That's America's prediction right now.
It's going to work.
Until it doesn't.
But it's not going to be good.
Yeah. That's my thought.
It will work as intended, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, exactly that.
All right.
Okay.
That's your augury reading?
That's my augury reading.
All right.
I'm sorry, my phone's getting blown up.
We'll see if the magistrate approves of this augury reading so that we can go forward with public action.
Okay.
Otherwise, government shutdown.
That might be an option. That feels like an option for sure.
Hit us up on Patreon and Elle will do a reading for you on the show using whatever divination method we're covering. If you like my writing, you can find books at rjwalkerpoet.com.
If you wanted to get a reading from me, you can find me on Etsy at Laurels of Lux, my website, laurelsoflux.com. You can send me an email, laurelsoflux@gmail.com. I am looking for thoughts, opinions, questions on the Akashic Records. You guys can still send me that information.
Music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Folker, Arthi Vinka, Miyu, and Scott Buckley.